Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And I'm choosing to take advantage of the second off day that the Warriors have in a row, one of those rare times, to do a preview of the road trip, to really go through each of these teams and the overall situation that's going to go through it. For those of you that haven't listened to it, you can also listen. My podcast from yesterday was on the big men, so went through JaVale and Pachulia, West, Looney, talked a little bit about Damian Jones as well, and you can listen to that. But this will go through the four games that comprise this road trip, and it's, you know, an East Coast trip, kind of paralleling one that they do around this time just about every year. And the trip starts on Wednesday with the Toronto Raptors, and the Raptors are 7-3, which is impressive on its own, but when you consider that two of their three losses were to the Cavs, including one tonight, and then their other loss was to the Kings in a strange game that Jonas Valanciunas didn't play in and DeMarcus Cousins went absolutely bonkers, you know, that does look even better. And while you can kind of think about the Raptors a few different ways, it is impressive that they are third in the league in offense, and then they're a respectable 13th in defense, which means they have a plus 5.9 net rating. And net rating is different than point margin, you know, like, so for those who just look at, you know, points for and points against, and the reason why I prefer it is because it adjusts for things like pace. So you really are making a fair comparison that way. And the guy who has been at the center of a lot of the success for Toronto is DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan is actually leading the NBA in scoring at the moment. He's averaging 34 points a game, and he's getting 10 to the line 10 times a game. He is 24.2 field goal attempts a game, so that's a lot of shots, but he's making a really high proportion of them, and that's why he has a really, really strong 31.54 PER, which is, I think it's top five after tonight's game, where he was actually a little worse than his averages against the Cavs. And one of the best things that were for the Warriors is that despite playing in a road game, you know, three time zones away in a foreign country, the Warriors have a huge rest advantage because they played on Sunday, and this game, of course, will be on Wednesday. And Toronto played Tuesday night in Cleveland against the Cavs. Hard fought game. Cleveland ended up pulling it out late. And something to watch that I learned from watching the game tonight that will probably carry over is that without their full complement of bigs, Jared Sullinger, who they signed this summer, is still out. He has, I believe it's a foot issue, and he's going to be out for a while, is that they don't really have much in the way of people who can defend stretch bigs. Their best guy actually for that is Pascal Siakam, who started against the Cavs, but likely will come off the bench against the Warriors because Damari Carroll will be back, presumably, for that game. It looks like they kind of had the choice of whether to play Carroll to bring him back against the Cavs or to bring him back against the Warriors. They chose the Warriors. Probably the right play, even though, you know, they ended up being a close game against the Cavs, but Cleveland is always a tough sell. So Carroll will probably be back. They've actually been playing Norman Powell at the three for the last couple of games. He's had the challenge of dealing with Melo, Porzingis, LeBron in the last couple of days, and then presumably he'll play the three at least a little bit and guard Kevin Durant. So tough run for the former UCLA Bruin, but he's done a pretty good job, and I like Powell a lot. And if he's coming off the bench, you know, that is an even more, not suitable role for him, but something that he can thrive in more just because he'll be playing against inferior competition. The Raptors are still kind of trying to figure out what to do at power forward. They've been playing Siakam a little bit there. They like Patrick Patterson, but I think they prefer to have him come off the bench. So how they use those guys will be important against a Warriors team that just doesn't play that many traditional fours when they slide Draymond to center, and so how they figure that out. But Patterson is not somebody that they really need to worry about in that way. And also, Patterson has a specific weakness as a pick-and-roll big man. So if they have him out there and Draymond and Steph are out there, like let's say at the end of the first quarter, expect to see hopefully a lot of Steph Draymond pick and rolls, because Patterson he doesn't have that kind of energy. It's not something he's very good at. So that is kind of the big arc of them Also, Kyle Lowry, of course, is still doing very well this year. He presumably will take the job of guarding Steph Curry. And he's looked confident finishing in the paint. It was something he did well against Cleveland, another team that sometimes plays less adept rim protectors, especially when Tristan Thompson's not on the floor. And the Warriors are doing a lot of that this year. I talked about that a little bit yesterday. So Lowry might try to take advantage of that. Whereas DeRozan, he gets to the cup in transition, but oftentimes he settles for mid-rangers in the half court. And the Warriors are relatively well suited for that. I'm interested to see whether the Warriors ever put Durant on him, because something DeRozan struggles with, even though strength is sometimes more of a problem for him, size can be a big one too, and he just can't really get a shot off on Durant. So if he plays well enough, you can do that, especially because the Raptors generally don't play offensive threats at small forward that are so tough that you have to put your best guy on them. So the Warriors could dance around a little bit with that. However, you often don't see that in a regular season game because, you know, you don't want to reveal all your tricks and try everything else. But the rest component of this is could potentially be really large. The Raptors broadly play really well at home and will have a fired up crowd. I mean, this is going to be one of the biggest games of their season, especially because they don't feel this kind of snake bit the way that they do against the Cavs, because Cleveland has just beaten them down so many times. So, you know, this could be the biggest game at their arena the whole year, in the regular season at least. And so fans will be up for it. I'm guessing Drake will be in attendance. And so, you know, they'll get all that stuff out there. And I think they'll play a very good game. Then the Warriors have a day off and fly to Boston, a place they've had some trouble over the years, playing the Celtics. Celtics are 5-5. They just lost to the Pelicans. And there are a lot of different parts of the Celtics that warrant discussion. One thing is that they have largely kind of struggled this year, but they've really defied expectations by being 6th in offense and 25th in defense. This is a team that we all kind of thought was going to be good defensively, but a big part of the reason why they've struggled there is because a lot of their best defenders haven't played, and they've been replaced by guys who just aren't that good in that way. And those differences might not come into play against the Warriors as much, and so Al Horford has missed a bunch of time due to a concussion, but he practiced in full on Tuesday, and so the expectation is that he will be back in time for the game on Friday. And then Jay Crowder might be back. It's not definite yet. I think the last I heard was that he might be questionable for that game. And Crowder is their best perimeter defender. And Horford, while imperfect as a center defender, was one of the anchors of Atlanta's successful team last year, and is a whole heck of a lot better than Tyler Zeller, who is the guy that they've started in his stead. Kelly Olynyk also recently got back from injury. He was dealing with a shoulder thing, actually similar to what happened to Kevin Love after Kelly Olynyk pulled his shoulder out of its socket. So they're getting all those guys back. And the other guy who will loom large in that game defensively is Marcus Smart. If Jay Crowder can't go, they're probably going to start Smart over Cal product and number 3 overall pick Jaylen Brown, because Smart is a more versatile defender. And despite his small stature, he has long arms and he's really strong. I would love to see Smart guarding Kevin Durant for extended periods. I think that would be one of the most interesting things that could happen on this road trip, just be how those guys do it. And Smart actually did a really nice job for short stretches against Anthony Davis. Boston's last game was on Monday night. They lost to the Pelicans, and they didn't really have those guys. Defenders just talked about how they've been missing a lot of their guys. And so they actually put on switches. Smart ended up on Davis, did a pretty good job. And, you know, in terms of physical profile, that's not too big a difference between Davis and Durant. So we'll see what happens there. Isaiah Thomas has been huge offensively for the Celtics so far. Makes sense, because he's had to take a lot of the playmaking onus. And also, Avery Bradley, broadly speaking, has been one of the best defenders of Stephen Curry over the years. Steph did light him up once. I think that was 2 seasons ago, but Bradley did a nice job on him at Oracle last year in the game the Celtics won. They were actually the first team to beat the Warriors at Oracle last year. And the game in Boston last year at the Garden went 2 overtimes and the Warriors ended up winning. That was actually the last game of their win streak. And in a strange parallel, though, even though that game, I think that was in late November, early December last year, they played the double overtime game, then flew to Milwaukee and ended up losing to the Bucks the next night. This time, they're in Boston on Friday, fly to Milwaukee, play the Bucks the next night, and the Bucks are better this year than they were last year. They're dealing with the injury to Chris Middleton, so their ceiling is a lot lower. Chris Middleton was a great two-way player for them, you know, nice knockdown three-point shooter, steady defender. But what they have been getting are huge performances from Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jabari Parker. They're two talented young forwards. They really are running a lot of point Giannis. It's not as kind of as ridiculous as it sounds in terms of he's not running the show the whole time. They play Matthew Dellavedova at point guard. It's kind of a parallel to what the Cavs have done with LeBron and Kyrie, if you know each one of them gets some playmaking onus. And then the difference is that Giannis is just so much better on the ball than off the ball offensively that you want him to have it a lot. Jabari has been great. So that'll be big challenges for Draymond Green and for Kevin Durant because those forwards are very dominant. And the other big difference with Milwaukee this year is that they've avoided mostly the Greg Monroe experiment in the starting five. And the reason that matters is because there was this theory, and I was one of the people who believed in it wrongly, that it didn't really matter that Monroe wasn't a great defender because they had all this depth. I called it the thicket of all these long-armed guys on the perimeter, and that, you know, you wouldn't be asking him to do a lot. But having somebody who wasn't at least an able help defender really did hurt their defense last year, and they've largely replaced Monroe in the starting lineup with Miles Plumlee, who they just gave a big contract to, a little bit with John Henson, who they also recently gave a big contract to, and then they use Monroe on the second unit as part of their offensive focus. And a big reason why they have to do that is because they don't really have a backup point guard in the true sense. They have Jason Terry, longtime Warriors, I don't know if you want to call it antagonist. I mean, he certainly was it for short periods of time, but they're dealing with that because they actually traded Michael Carter-Williams to the Bulls for Tony Snell, and Tony Snell is typically, now that he's gotten all the way back to full strength, he's actually starting at shooting guard in Chris Middleton's absence, so they don't really play a straight one on that second unit. They've been giving minutes to Malcolm Brogdon, who's doing a nice job. He's a rookie out of the University of Virginia, and he's doing a nice job. I believe he was taken right around the same time as Pat McCaw. I don't remember the picks. I'm doing this blind in terms of that. But they might end up facing off against each other, and both of them have looked good to start the season. So one of the challenges for the Warriors in this game is going to be how they defend Giannis, particularly when Durant is out of the game. If Iguodala can do a good job, then the Warriors could actually have a huge advantage because they can do the stagger with Durant. And then if Durant is on the floor and Giannis is not, they can just beast because they don't really have that other perimeter defender. Snell will probably try a little bit. They'll dance around various guys, but they just don't have somebody with the strength and speed to handle Durant. So the Bucks are 14th in offense, they're 10th in defense, and they've actually been outscoring opponents this year by 1.8 is their plus 1.8 is their net rating. They're 5-4, but it is worth noting that they haven't really played any good teams. They've been a lot of these kind of middle of the roads, the Indianas of the world, the Dallases of the world, that kind of thing. I don't think they played any of the top five teams yet. So it's a good story, but we'll have to see how they do against the best of the best and really at full strength. And so they deserve full credit. Jason Kidd has done a nice job getting them up for each game, and even some of their losses have been close. The game they played against Dallas, they probably should have won, but they just fell apart a little bit late, and then Dallas ended up winning that game in overtime. So it will be a fun one in a lot of ways for Warriors fans. I mean, it's a Saturday night, so that is a little bit weird. But also, the whole Dellavedova-Curry thing, as somebody who covered the 2015 finals, the games in Cleveland, I remember all the Delly jersey shirts after Game 3 when Delly played really well, and then Game 4 when he did not. And Dellavedova has a nice fit in Milwaukee because he doesn't have to have the ball as much and he can scrap defensively. So they will be able to just kind of sick him on Steph Curry in that way. Steph, after that Game 3, has relished lighting Delly up. I think that is something we will see in this game. But, you know, it'll be exciting to see how the Warriors handle a team that has two dynamic forwards, because that's just not something that happens very much, especially because both Giannis and Jabari can create for themselves, and there just aren't that many power forwards even. Like, I talked about the idea of having two forwards, but even having a power forward that can really take somebody off the dribble. He has a very versatile offensive game, even though his jumper isn't all the way out yet. And both Giannis and Jabari are both absolute monsters in transition, and the Warriors have been pretty bad in transition defense. So if they're making their shots, the Warriors won't have to worry about that too much. But if they're missing early, the Bucks can start to go on a little bit of run, get that crowd into it. And so I don't, you know, expect the Warriors to lose that game, But they certainly have a chance because they're on the back-to-back, and the Bucks don't play the day before. They have a travel day from Miami, so that is a situation where they have the rest, where the Bucks have the rest advantage. And while, you know, that isn't always the end-all be-all, it is a pretty good thing to note. And so then that's on Saturday, and then the last game of the road trip is against the Indiana Pacers, which is on Monday, so the Warriors will have normal rest. They have to go only from Milwaukee to Indianapolis, not that long a flight. And the Pacers play the night before in Oklahoma City, so they actually travel further and don't have a day off. So that's good. That's a big advantage for the Warriors. The Pacers have also struggled immensely to start the season. They're 5-6 and just won one of the ugliest games of the entire season at home against Orlando. It was the return of their coach Frank Vogel. And the biggest problem that the Pacers have had has been on the defensive end, because they basically replaced Jan Mahinmi, talented guy, signed with Washington, true center, with Thaddeus Young. Thad Young, talented guy, actually played pretty well against the Warriors as a member of the Brooklyn Nets last year in a game at Oracle that the Nets should have won, but that's a huge defensive downgrade. Turner is a talented guy. I really do like him. I've been a believer in him for a long time, but he's also prone to foul trouble, so something the Warriors can do with the guards, because Durant's going to have to contend with Paul George. But if they can get to the line and get Miles Turner in foul trouble, that will be a big help, because his backup is Al Jefferson. And, you know, Jefferson can score some points with his back to the basket, but as a defender, he's not really there anymore. So at this point in the year, the Pacers are 16th in offense, 17th in defense, and they're getting outscored by 2.6 points per 100 possessions, which is kind of a lot when you consider that their talent level is doing pretty well. You also, of course, have former Warrior Monte Ellis will probably start. He did get benched for one game, and they put CJ Miles in the starting lineup. And that would probably be a smart thing to do with Klay Thompson on the floor, but I'm guessing Coach Nate McMillan is going to go back to the well with Monte. And then their starting one is Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague was on the Hawks for years, and he's struggled a little bit to find his way on the Pacers. He's been missing a lot of threes that he normally makes, and the offense is just a little bit discombobulated. But the key to the Pacers, as always, is Paul George. George is a spectacular player still, talented defender, even if, kind of like Durant, he doesn't necessarily bring it on that end every night just because he has so much in terms of offensive responsibilities. But call it instinct, I'm guessing he will be excited about the idea of facing Durant and getting that kind of a bright stage, even if the game's not, I believe it's not on national television, but just that's a big challenge for him. Durant's one of the best threes in the league, and George gets to prove his mettle. Something else to watch in this is that, broadly speaking, the Pacers' second unit has been pretty awful. They don't have a lot of guys there. They've been trying to make things work. They've also been dealing a little bit with injuries, and also dealing with some injuries on the top end. Paul George missed a little time, and as Warriors fans can attest to, missing time at the top can lead to pushing other players into roles they're not very good at. So we'll see if Glenn Robinson III plays in this game. And Kevin Serafin actually did a nice job in their game against Orlando. He was on the Wizards and the Knicks for the past couple years and is actually the third string center, but outplayed Al Jefferson in that. So if Serafin's in, it's hilarious. I used to cover him when I lived in D.C. He basically likes to jump hook every time he touches the ball. It's hilarious. He's actually not that bad a player. He can be a better passer, but I love watching him jump hook because it's just something that he does. So those of you who know me know that I do not like doing predictions, even when for Warriors Weekly, back when for Warriors World, I didn't even predict single games. I would just do like a week. My instinct is that they will go 3-1 on this road trip. If I were to say the second most likely, it would definitely be 2-2 over 4-0, largely due to the back-to-back and just having probably two teams that will be playing really well. Boston has struggled this year, but they should be close to full strength. And the Celtics always get up for the Warriors. Brad Stevens does a nice job coaching against them. So 3-1 would be a real success. That would be a sign that this is a team to watch. 4-0 would be an absolute triumph. And 2-2 would be totally fine. So it will be a nice little test for the Warriors to see how it goes. And for those of you who are in the mood for something a little bit different, I'm really excited. I've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but since it, especially because it ties in with the Warriors, that my podcast partner, Nate Duncan, and I are launching the Twitter NBA show with Warriors Raptors. And so what that's going to be is Nate and I are going to be at Twitter HQ, and we're going to be doing a live broadcast at halftime of Warriors Raptors, then another one at halftime of Grizzlies Clippers, and then we will do a post-game show at the end of Grizzlies Clippers. We might actually, if the Clippers keep dominating like they have before, it might actually be before the end of the game, because a great thing about Twitter and Periscope is that you can go live whenever you want, and we'll have the capability of doing that. But anyway, so we'll do 10 minutes at halftime, 10 minutes at halftime, and then 30 plus after the game, including, you know, a fair portion on Warriors Raptors, especially because it is the high profile game of the night. It's going to be a really fun experience for us going live, doing all that, incorporating all of our preparation, and also getting to kind of cue people into what's going to happen in the rest of a game, because the nature of Dunked On and a lot of the other stuff that I do is talking about things after the fact, except for on Twitter. And this will be fun to do that the other way. If you want to follow it, I will definitely have tweets about it. You can also follow Nate on Periscope, Nate Duncan NBA, which is the same as his Twitter handle. And if you follow that, you can get notifications, things like that. I'm pretty sure we're not going to spam you with random Periscopes during everything. And it's going to be a really fun new project. And the other part that's so exciting is that it will involve viewer submissions as well. I'm so used to saying listener submissions, but since it's a video broadcast, it will be viewers as well. So you can use the hashtag TwitterNBAShow, and then we will be answering questions. And so it's great. If you ask about the game, if you ask about that first half, we will talk about, we'll pick a few questions at halftime. We'll also try to answer some on Periscope. We're still figuring out exactly how that's going to work. And the Twitter NBA show will be, the start plan of it is that it's going to be weekly and that it will focus on the best games of the week. So that will probably involve the Warriors a fair amount, still trying to work out the logistics of if one of the best games of the week is a Warriors home game. Figure all that out, of course, but it's a really exciting opportunity. I hope any and all of you are ready to come on board. It's going to be a lot of fun and a new challenge for the two of us. And we've had a great time doing Dunked On for the last year and a half. And when Twitter approached us about doing this, we were really excited. And one of the greatest things about it for me is that we came together on an idea very, very quickly. I mean, within the first, let's say, half hour of when this was really pitched, we had the fundamental idea of what we wanted to do. And then after dancing around a million other things, just because you feel like you want to do your due diligence, we ended up right back where the kind of the original thought was. And we are not doing a specific day of the week. Some people have asked that because we want to have it vary based on what games are the best. And so what the interest is. And so it really is going to be this week. And then we're probably going to take Thanksgiving week off. Nate's traveling. And then we will be back after that on a weekly basis. And if the interest is strong enough, it will become a lot more than weekly. You know, we'll try to do national games when they start airing on the weekend and things like that. But of course, no need to put the cart before the horse. We have to do well with the early part to get into the later part. But any support you have would be greatly appreciated. Any notes you have would be greatly appreciated. And you can reach out to me through this or anything else at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLaRoux, or DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com. I get feedback regularly. I really do appreciate it, even if I don't respond super quickly, but I do read it and do appreciate it. If you want to support the show, you can download every episode, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review in whatever podcast player you use. Really do appreciate that. And also everybody who spreads the word through other means, through social media, through Facebook, through just telling people that you actually know. It is a great way to grow this, and I'm so happy for all of the support and thankful for all of the support that I've had so far. And for those of you that want to, you know, check out the other Locked On podcasts, we do have a lot of great basketball stuff, and then David Locke does Locked On NBA, which is also great, another one of those just much recommended podcasts in terms of the overall basketball. And then for football people, there are football podcasts for every team, Niners, Raiders, whoever else you like. The Bay Area is a place full of transplants, so whatever team you're interested in. And a great thing about the Locked On Network is that, you know, for people who are interested in different teams or interested in different teams at a given time, you know, maybe you saw that Seahawks Patriots game and thought, oh, I wonder what they're thinking about that. You could listen to Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Pats, whatever you want to do. Same thing, of course, in the NBA. A lot of great people doing great work. Many of you have heard their handiwork on the crossover episodes and everything like that. I've known many of the hosts for years. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.